This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Mike Florence and Charles Metcalf. Mike, you're the General Manager, and Charles, you're the co-chairman of the International Wine Challenge.
That's right, yeah.
How did the show start?
It started in a very modest way. Robert Joseph and I were running a magazine which at that stage was called What Wine, in a stable that included what car, what van, what hi-fi, what wheelbarrow. And we just found ourselves with a couple of pages to fill one issue. And we're scratching our heads a bit, and we came up with the idea of doing something on English wine. We'd tasted some nice English wines in the sort of recent past. And we thought, well, perhaps we could put together a tasting event which would show them to good effect. And so we got together the best English wines we could find with a raft of other famous wines from other countries, other wine countries, you know, really famous names such as Blue Nun, Piat d'Or, I think Black Tar was in there, you know, some big names. And we held our tasting with as many international tasters as we could, all resident in London, but we had a Bulgarian, an Italian, a Spaniard, a German, you know, as many as we could think of. And the English wines won. We filled our two pages. Questions were asked in the Houses of Parliament about this miraculous competition where English wines had triumphed. And the wine industry came back to us after this and said, look, you know, when you have competitions, you're usually allowed to choose your own team. Perhaps next time you do this, we could choose the wines we send you. And we said, fine, not really realizing that there was going to be a repeat of this, but... and so they sent lots of wines, and one thing has grown. And for the last, I would say, 4 years, we've been around the 9,000.
Yeah, probably.
Four or five years.
Probably 5 to 8 years, actually, now. We're, above the 9,000.
We sort of chugged along at about 6,000 for a few years before that, and then we took a bit of a leap and have been up at this really pretty substantial size.
Is that the most wines in any competition?
That's our understanding, yes. We consider ourselves to be the largest competition in the world.
I think there was once a one-day competition that was held somewhere in France where they tasted more wines in one day with literally about 1,000 tasters than we tasted in our 2 weeks. But that was just a sort of one-off event held for the Guinness Book of Records. We do it every year as seriously as we can. We're not interested in the Guinness Book of Records, and I think we are the largest on a regular basis.
No, I think it's safe to say. But, you know, it's more about the integrity of the competition than the size, we believe. So it's certainly, as far as our judging process is concerned, we consider ourselves to be the most rigorous of all competitions that are staged throughout the world.
And how does the judging work? It seems to be like a two-cup process, is it?
Absolutely. We decided that we got more refined results, you know, better results, if we whisked through the whole of the entry in week one and then went back to award the specific medals that were going to be won by wines in week two. So that's exactly what we do. In the first week, 5 days of the first week, we taste all 9,000, however many hundred wines have been entered. And we just ask our tasters to tell us whether they're out, whether they're going to get a commendation, and in those two cases not play any further part in the contest, or whether they're worthy of a medal, in which case they're retasted in week two, where we do it we try and ask people to slow down, really think about the wines, not just give big marks to the sort of big showy wines, but to look for the subtle, elegant wines as well. And, you know, we do the actual medal awarding in that second week. And I think that works very well. I don't know of anywhere else that does it like that. The other thing we do, which is different from a lot of the other wine competitions that I've judged at throughout the world, this is more on the Australian and New Zealand model, is that we discuss everything. We don't just give points, add them up, and divide by the number of tasters. And I think that's a much, much more successful way of judging as well.
I found, I came in and did some judging on Monday for the first time, which was brilliant. I found it was a really good learning opportunity, actually, because there was a just dialogue, and we had people in my team that were really very knowledgeable, and we got a chance to talk about it. And I actually learned quite a bit about some weird grape varieties and all sorts of stuff that I wouldn't normally get a chance to try.
Good. I mean, you know, we do find that we try and get in judges from all sorts of different countries all over the world. So, I mean, we have people here today from Italy, from Portugal, from Spain, from France. And Mike's just shown me this bit of paper where we've actually got 425 different tasters participating, not all at once. We have about 100, 120 tasters a day. But we've got from countries such as Austria, Belgium, Germany, Greece, Hungary, Italy, the USA, Japan. We've got a few Japanese judges in today. And the Japanese sommeliers, the standard of knowledge of Japanese sommeliers is absolutely phenomenal. Portugal, France, Australia, as well as from New Zealand.
Obviously, you do your two cuts. And how many wines sort of get rejected? Or you put them into commendable and out. Is that right?
That's right. Those are the ones that are only make an appearance in the first week and don't reappear in week two.
All right, so if you get a commendable, you're not really getting a second chance. How many wines come through for the second week of judging?
We should probably just make a point that they do get a second chance, and they do get a second chance via our co-chairman. In round one, they will review every wine that our panel of judges have deemed to be commendable or an out. Then the co-chairman, if they see a wine which they perhaps think is perhaps medal-worthy, they will then call upon another co-chairman to make a group decision that they are happy to raise that wine to a medal standard and therefore put it through to round two.
Oh, okay. And who gets to try all these wines that were rejected?
We do. I mean, it's the five of us. I have to say, it's not a lot of fun in the first week, Chris, to be honest, because we are only tasting the ones that
Dross.
Have been rejected or at most given a commended. We don't taste any of the medal wines in the first week at all. But, you know, we get to taste them in the second week, so that's good.
Okay. So, again, back to the question, how many make it through to the second round?
At this point in time, for this year, we're working on about 45% at this point in time. We did some figures this morning, and it was just a tick over 45%.
Even including all those horrible ones from yesterday, Mike?
Even including
those
horrible ones from yesterday.
Wow, that really surprised me. We had an awful lot of pretty rough wines thrown at us yesterday.
Excellent. That's quite high, though, isn't it? That's quite good.
Yeah, I mean, that's not to say that in round two that they will be deemed medal-worthy. The judges still have the opportunity to then either throw the wines out, give them a commended, or assign them their various medals.
Okay, but you've got half the number of wines, so you can spend a lot more time on the wines.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. We try and sort of work around 50 wines per day per panel for the group of four or five judges. So.
We tasted a lot more than that on Monday.
That's correct. So that's for round two. For round one, when the decision is, you know, is it out, commended, or is it medal worthy, then, yeah, you're working closer to sort of 90 to 100 wines per day.
That's quite good, though, because you'll end up with wines that are of a higher standard, so you can pick the better qualities.
That's the hope. And also in round two, we're asking our tasters to write tasting notes, which we don't need in round one, because the wines that are chucked out aren't going to be published anywhere. The wines that are commended get into the publication, but not with tasting notes.
How do you prepare the wine for it? Because I noticed on Monday some of the reds were actually quite cold, which isn't necessarily the best condition for red wines.
Come on, Chris, you've got a pair of warm hands. You can cup the glass in your hands and warm it up, for goodness sake.
Cupping between my thighs.
Yours or any friendly person nearby. No, to be perfectly honest, you look down at that floor down there. We're sitting on a balcony overlooking the floor where we keep all the wines.
Thousands.
And there are literally thousands of wines. I mean, if you say we've got, yeah, well,
there's about 40,000
wines down there. It's nearer 10 than 9,000. And there are just lines stretching as far as not as the eye can see, but to the end of this big space. And as Mike says, about 45,000 wines down there. I'm afraid we can go as far as chilling our sparkling wines, but that's it really. We try and get the people who run the building to get a good ambient temperature for tasting. And my feeling has always been, excuse me, that it's better to taste too cool than too hot. because if you've got a wine that has been yeasted too much, it's much more of a business to discern the various subtleties than it is if it's served a bit cool, and then you have to think about sort of warming it up a bit with your hand.
And also, most tasters taste ambient anyway. I mean, when I was doing my WCT, we tasted whites and reds at the same temperature, so I suppose you get used to it after a while.
You know, to be honest, as an experienced taster, you can make a bit of a mental leap and think, if this is a white wine and it's being served warmer than I would normally serve it were I serving it at home, you know, you can make a leap to think what would happen to that wine if it was a few degrees cooler.
What about letting the wines breathe? Do you let any of the wines breathe?
We get the cork out, don't we, Mike?
And pretty much. I mean, there are certain styles, I mean, such as your vintage ports, which we make an effort to decant. We see that as being critical. That gives them, obviously, a decent amount of breathing time. As Charles is saying, time is not necessarily on our side. It's quite important that we keep the wines flowing as quickly and efficiently and as effectively as possible. So, unfortunately, as far as letting the wines breathe, it's perhaps not quite.
But, you know, in defence of that, I agree absolutely with what Mike said, and time is a real pressure for us. But in defence of that, how many people at home will open a bottle of red wine, pour it into a decanter, unless, of course, they're ashamed of it and wish to pretend it's better than it is, and actually let a wine breathe? Most people that I know get the wine, they pull the cork out, they pour it into the glasses, and they drink it. And yeah, some of them even sniff it. I mean, I spend quite a lot of time smelling wine compared to most of the wine drinkers I know.
You've got a thing called two strikes and you're out. This is with faulty wines. We're going to be talking with Sam next week about wine faults, but what's the reason for that?
The reason for that is that we feel people are sending us four bottles of each sample. And the idea behind four bottles is that you have two bottles possible for the first round, two bottles for the second round if it gets through to the second round. Now, there are all sorts of reasons, but the principal problems we have where we would call for another bottle are problems of cork taint or of oxidation, because those are two things where we feel another bottle might perform better. But once out of four bottles, you've got a fault rate of 50% on a particular wine, I don't feel happy about recommending that bottle to people to drink. You know, if we're saying one in two bottles you're going to buy is going to be a duff bottle, I don't think that's much of a recommendation.
Sure, no, that makes sense. What sort of value does the award have? You know, if I win a gold medal or a trophy or something like that, you know, what does that do to my bottom line? Is it important?
I think it's absolutely critical, and it's really why we're here at the end of the day. I mean, we have stats, such as, a specific wine that a couple of years ago won a trophy. Without any price increase on this wine, stated its regular price, sales rose by over 730%. 6 months later, they were still up by 150%. So we believe that what we're offering the trade is certainly benefiting them as well as the consumer.
And I think that example that Mike cites is a very good one, because the first thing that I would say in response to your question, Chris, is that an award is only as valuable as what you make of it as a wine producer or a wine merchant. If you win a gold medal and you tuck your gold medal winning wine away on some shelf, tell nobody about it, it probably won't mean anything. You know, you might, in passing conversation, mention to one or two customers in your shop, oh yes, this wine got a gold medal, and they might buy something. If you shout it from the rooftops, it can make a huge difference. And that's exactly what this company did. It happens to be a large supermarket. And they shouted it. They took big ads in papers. And it hugely increased their sales. But the point is that, as Mike says, sales were still up 150% from where they had been after the brew hoo-ha had died down. And, you know, that, I think, is where we are benefiting the consumer as well as the retailer or producer, because we've drawn their attention to something that is, frankly, a better wine.
What about the costs of entering a competition like this? It's obviously that started out as quite a sociable wee thing from What Wine, which I don't even know exists anymore, does it?
Well, What Wine was the name that then changed into Wine Magazine. Then it became Wine International, but you are unfortunately right. It's RIP Wine International now. It's sadly, it's laid down its pages.
But the competition lives on, which is quite funny, isn't it? The magazine that spawned it has...
it's great. I mean, I think the reality of the situation was it's difficult to produce a wine magazine for consumers and to make a profit, whereas this competition has been, you know, just by the size of it, you can see it has been successful, and touching every piece of wood that I have in within reach, it will continue to be successful and make decent money and benefit all those who participate.
Who owns the competition?
It's a company called William Reed Business Media, who started out in publishing back in, well, the late 19th century, and have been very much sort of food and drinks focused, but sort of branching out into the exhibitions and events side of things. They've had control of the Wine Challenge for the last three years. Investment in the event has been absolutely fantastic. It's it's taken it to a whole new level now, and you know, we're seeing the benefits first and foremost. The quality of the results that we're generating are better than they've ever been before. Investment in our judges is obviously absolutely critical. We have new to this year a panel of 20 chairmen who are with us for the full duration. They're taking control of their panels and working very closely with our chairman to ensure that we're judging at the right level and at the consistent level that we expect.
Okay, and getting on to how much it costs to enter a bottle of wine?
You're looking at £73.80 plus VAT plus four samples. It does vary if you're an international entrant. It's a little bit more because we cover the cost of their freight. It makes the process a lot easier for them. If all they have is just one set entry fee, we tell them where to send their samples, and then we take care of the rest. It's a much more easier and effective way of doing it.
If you've got international wines coming in, you've got all sorts of duty issues.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And obviously, it's critical that we follow all the rules and regulations that are set out by the VAT man, and that way we can control it a lot more effectively.
And is the competition a profit centre? Does it make money?
Yeah, of course it does. I mean, if it didn't, Chris, it would have gone the sad way of Wine What? International. You know, What Wine / Wine Magazine / Wine International. It was bought by a company who wanted it because it was profitable. And it's profitable because it's, I think, and as Mike says, a well-run operation that offers really good advice to drinkers all over the world.
When I was judging on Monday, and I came in on Monday, I actually suffered from a cold. I was fine for the first three or four
Did you
flights.
Infect anyone?
Just the panel with me. I haven't seen them today. No, it was just the end of a cold. But the first three or four flights, I was fine. And then after that, my nose packed up. I could still get fruit on the mouth, so I was good at balance and finding any problems with the balance of the wine. But I really missed any subtlety on the nose. What happens if a judge comes down with a cold or is off?
Well, I mean, the first answer to that, I guess, is that judge might well choose not to come in. You know, say, look, I know that I'm not going to be as effective as judge as I would normally be, and just stay at home, and possibly not telling the boss that he's not actually at the International Wine Challenge and go off and...
Play some golf,
as he might. That is a possibility. But if someone does come in, I mean, I think it would be only sensible to realise shortcomings and tell the panel chairman that, look, I'm not on top form today, a bit blocked. And the panel chair will sort of...
Take
that into account when arriving at the consensus.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's what happened to us after I realised. Yeah. I got to a load of Grunewaldlingers and I was going, these don't smell of anything at all. And I don't expect Grüne to be particularly aromatic, but it...
It's a great pity when, you know, you're looking forward to coming and tasting an event like this and the nose lets you down.
Yeah, it's a bit... I was very disappointed, but these things happen.
Yeah.
Just before we wrap up, I noticed this year you had a big sake tasting. Is that new or...?
We've included the sake category in the last 3 years. Previously, it was part of the International Spirits Challenge, actually. And then we decided, well, it's actually a better fit to be in the International Wine Challenge. So in our first year, we had a couple of entries, and actually one of which was truly outstanding. In fact, it came away with a trophy. And we thought, hang on a second, there's something that we're missing here. And so we've worked very closely with the Sake Samurai Association in Japan to help build the category to the point now where this year we had 312 sakes entered. They've been, their support has been absolutely crucial to the success of this, you know, part of the wine challenge, because they have brought over a number of panel chairmen directly from Japan, who obviously know the category, you know, very, very well. You know, yesterday we did our trophy tasting of sake, and the results that we've, you know, generated there have been, you know, fantastic. And I think they've been actually really quite impressed with the quality that we've managed to, you know, introduce into the wine challenge. So
bringing, I mean, we've had tasters. I wasn't tasting sake myself because it's not a category I know well. But we've had specialists not only from Japan but also from the States, from continental Europe, just coming over to do that category. And I think the results are going to be very exciting and really worthwhile.
Anything you can tell me? This show will be going out just before the show comes out.
Unfortunately, not. I mean, I can tell you that we've got 13 gold medals this year, of which we've managed to. I'm pretty sure we're at 8 trophies. One champion sake. The trophies will be announced mid-June, and the champion sake will be announced at our awards dinner on the 3rd of September.
So we hope you can come along then, Chris.
Brilliant. Sounds good. I'll look forward to my invitation. Yes. All right then, guys. I think we'll wrap it up. I know you've got hundreds of wines to get back to.
Absolutely.
And thank you very much for your time.
Good. Thanks very much.